Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. 1 hour from now, the great Greg Cosell. If you bet football, you love fantasy football, you want to get smarter in football, I learn something every week. Greg Cosell, our NFL meat sandwich in 1 hour. And Joy Taylor's joining me. I did think about this driving home yesterday. The Staples Center here in Los Angeles. It's an office supply company. It's not that, you know, it doesn't feel like the Boston Garden or old Yankee Stadium or the Rose Bowl. But Staples Center in Los Angeles, people are, you know, a little, they don't like it that crypto.com is now the name of the arena. And right. I did think this is the world we live in now. I cannot buy a cup of coffee with cryptocurrency, but you can buy the naming rights to Staples Center for $700 million. I could not buy this pen with cryptocurrency. Now, currently in America, maybe in a year we can. I can't figure out all this cryptocurrency stuff. I hope all of you that have invested get wildly rich. I'm happy for those. But just when you say cryptocurrency to me, just put a big question mark on my face because I don't understand any of it. I'm too stupid. I can't figure it out. I like cash, credit cards, and real estate.
I'm trying to figure it out. I know people are going to, we're a little upset about it, but you know, people, I feel like everyone reacts to this every time. Now, there's been stadiums that have been renamed 15 times and they just call it whatever the original one was or they remember what the new name is. But you know, some nostalgia to.
Like to me, the Rose Bowl in Los Angeles, that's the stadium. The Coliseum and the Rose, but the Rose Bowl mostly.
Like we will refer to it as SoFi because it's SoFi Stadium.
Right. Because that was his first name.
Right.
I don't have any other recollection of it.
Right. Exactly. Like whatever it is the first time around. But then you'll get used to it and eventually you'll start calling it that. And then we can go in there and buy beers with the crypto. Then we'll really get into it.
Dogecoin, whatever that is. Okay. Let me start with this. Joy and I got into a conversation the other day about the downside to technology. And it worries me a lot. I think I benefit a lot from technology, but I think it's made us as a country impatient, and there's no going back. We are a more impatient country because of tech. I got my phone. People don't read articles. They just read headlines. You scroll through TikTok every morning. You scroll through Instagram. I need to constantly, as we're caffeinated, very frenetic, give me information, give me images. The other thing that makes people impatient is money. Hey, I got money. I got DoorDash. Food comes to me. I can pay for somebody to do my dry cleaning, wash my car. And football in America is big money. And people talk about Nick Saban retiring because he's getting near 70 and Bill Belichick retiring. But what is actually happening for Saban and Belichick is the game is getting easier for them, and here's why. Because college football now, there's so much money in it that if you're not good after 9 games like Sark in Texas, we're like, well, let's just fire him. Because donors now are not millionaires. Donors now have billions. And so they just write a $25, $35, $45 million check. Let's get rid of Sark. He's no good. You don't even give people a year. I mean, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe. We didn't think about firing him. Wealth creates impatience. I saw a story yesterday. Bill Belichick now makes $18 million a year. He's the highest paid coach in America, makes twice of what the best NBA coach makes, Steve Kerr, makes almost twice as Saban. And he's worth every penny, by the way. But it's also getting easier for Belichick. So when people talk about Belichick retiring, you know, Brady's going to retire. We always talk about quarterbacks can play forever. Why can't Belichick coach for another decade? I want you to think of this for a second. Tonight, the Patriots, with a rookie quarterback, go on the road to Atlanta, facing a former MVP quarterback, Matt Ryan, who's still pretty darn good. and the Patriots are a touchdown favorite. Why? Is it personnel? Is it Mac Jones? No, Matt Ryan today is a better quarterback than Matt Jones. Mac Jones, we know that, right? It's Belichick on a short week against a rookie head coach on a short week. And the market in Vegas says, that's about a touchdown. That's a coaching mismatch. Think about this. A loaded Dallas Cowboys team at home with an MVP-level quarterback, Dak Prescott. He's in the MVP race, right? With great weapons. Was only an 8-point favorite at home against Atlanta. Atlanta goes home, desperate team, veteran quarterback. They're now a 7-point dog to New England with a rookie quarterback. What the hell's going on? The betting markets are telling you. After 5 or 6 top quarterbacks, Belichick moves the line more than any other human in the league. That is unprecedented. That has never happened. They always say that about the John Madden, the former Fox broadcaster, is that Madden was the only person in the history of football analysts that moved the needle. A Madden game got a bigger rating. A Madden blowout, you'd stick around for Madden. That's how big John Madden was. That's not an opinion. That's like the data, the metrics all showed people would watch a game because it was a Madden game. I always felt that as a kid growing up with Keith Jackson doing college football. Oh, it's a Keith Jackson game. I'm going to watch. And I felt that with Madden. Think about this. It's getting easier for Belichick. Currently, there's 11 NFL head coaches because of all this money and impatience in football. Nick Saban is now often facing a first-year head coach, a coordinator who's been given a head coaching job who's really a coordinator. It's getting easier for Saban. Saban's got his worst team in 13 years. They're number 2 in the country. It's his worst team, a freshman quarterback. Belichick's got a rookie quarterback. He's a touchdown favorite against Atlanta on a short week with a rookie quarterback? Think about this. There's currently 11 NFL head coaches. 11, over a third of the league that are in their first or second year. Belichick is playing chess to checkers. Who's Belichick lost to this year? And, Sean Payton. Bruce Arians. Mike McCarthy. Here's Belichick's wins this year. Robert Saleh, blowout twice. Brandon Staley. Matt Rhule. Kevin Stefanski, blowout. David Culley. Belichick has so much institutional knowledge, so many experiences, that he now moves the needle. Isn't that incredible? To me, it's just like, wow. Wow. All right, I want to talk about a word that we don't use a ton. Now, we all know it's important. I mean, nobody is going to say this word's not important, but I do think it's underrated. I told you years ago, Joy, I thought curious was underrated. I've never met a curious person that was not either happy or successful. Curious, want more information. You just want to travel. You want to see the world. Curious people are happier. Curious people tend to be more successful. They're always looking for information and experiences. Another word that is really underrated, we know it has value, is trust. This is a prime example. Joy doesn't even know this. Is when I told bosses I want to get Joy Taylor on the show. The reason was trust. Well, she's talented. Well, yeah, she's talented. But we both know there's a lot of talented people. I said, I trust Joy. Joy will come on the show. If I say something stupid, she's quick. She's verbal. She's got the ability to talk. She's done radio for years and years. So I can put her without a script. Joy could talk her way through a battleship. She could talk for all day. She talks in the makeup room in the morning. She talks getting coffee. Joy can talk. She probably talks to herself. And I said, I trust Joy. Joy can talk. Joy can talk all day long. There you go. You didn't know that. So trust is underrated. Not that the talent's not great, but do you trust your best friends? Do you trust your wife on the road in Vegas with her girlfriends after 2 glasses of wine? Do you trust? Trust is a big thing. Jay Glazer was on Pat McAfee's podcast or his YouTube show yesterday, and he says he doesn't think the Browns are 100% committed to Baker Mayfield. And I want to talk in facts here because y'all think I hate Baker. It's not a talent issue. It's a trust issue. Baker Mayfield's pass attempts per game, as the league is now a quarterback league and a passing league. There's no teams now that run more than throw. Like, it doesn't happen. Rams are like 65 pass, 35 run. as the league's become more quarterback-centric and more pass-happy, Baker's averaged fewer pass attempts every year of his career. He throws now less per game than Tua, Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold. We know Carolina coaches don't trust Sam. We know Miami coaches are reluctant with Tua. So your parents will show you as a kid how much they trust you by the responsibility they grant you. They don't want Baker throwing the ball. I don't even know if they trust him at the microphone. Like, he gets a little snarky. Baker's issue is a trust issue. It's not a talent issue. When Cleveland last week, I thought this was big, when they rushed to sign not one, but two offensive linemen early, it told you what the GM and the coach, because they're tight, right? Andrew Berry, Stefanski come in around same time. It told you who they trusted. We trust our offensive linemen. We can build around our offensive linemen. We can pay our offensive linemen a lot. We trust they'll keep us in games, keep us competitive. Buffalo did that to Josh Allen 40 games into his career. That's what the Chargers will do early to Justin Herbert. That's what the Chiefs did early to Patrick Mahomes. We trust Patrick. He may have slumps. He'll get out of it. So I don't know where they're at on Baker. I think it's a 50-50 split here. If he wins the rest of the way, then they're probably going to go with it. But I do think you have to consider things like, oh my gosh, the AFC is now loaded with good young quarterbacks. And I, as I name these quarterbacks, what's the word you think of? Mac Jones. You trust him not to make big mistakes. Patrick Mahomes. You trust he'll keep you in games. Justin Herbert. Trust. Lamar Jackson. By the way, these guys have different games, different sizes. Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence, you trust his talent will overcome some of their deficiencies. We always talk about talent. This trust is underrated. Baker throws a really good ball. Baker's got a quick release. He's not ideal size, but he's reckless. He can be snarky. He's always got to win the press conference, calls out the medical staff. They're not sold on him. His talent is absolutely better than Tua. His talent is, I think, as good or better than Daniel Jones. Trust in Cleveland with Baker is not great because the coaches and parents will do this. They'll show you how much they trust you by the responsibility they grant you every year. Fewer pass attempts, fewer pass attempts, fewer pass attempts, as the league often has their best quarterbacks getting more pass attempts, more pass attempts, more pass attempts. Trust.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Mac Jones plays tonight. You can watch the rookie quarterback. I think New England does beat Atlanta. Interesting game. Mac Jones last week had the highest passer rating of any quarterback in the NFL. And the most games with 100-plus passer rating among first-round quarterbacks. Mac Jones has 5. Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields have none. So he's gotten off to a very good spot. And, you know, we talk a lot about, I've said this before, the media likes stories and interesting. What coaches like is winning. Mac Jones is never, ever going to be beloved by the media. Brett Favre was always more quotable than Tom Brady. He was more fun to watch than Tom Brady. Brady is so much better than Brett Favre. But Favre was everybody's favorite quarterback. He's got big commercials, easy to root for, said y'all, connects with the South, the Midwest, the coasts. Mac Jones is not quotable, he's not exciting, and there's not going to be a lot of wow moments. It reminds me a lot of Ryan Tannehill. We never talk about Ryan Tannehill. Look how bad the Miami Dolphins are since he left. They are one of the weirdest, strangest, most inconsistent franchises in the league. With Tannehill, they were always about 500. It was quite an accomplishment. Ryan Tannehill, since he got to Tennessee, has won more games than any quarterback except Aaron Rodgers. He's 26-10, completed almost 68% of his throws, has a passer rating of 105, a 3-to-1 touchdown-to-interception ratio, and is crazy mobile. He was a former college wide receiver. The last 2 years, Ryan Tannehill is unquestionably a top five quarterback. But he doesn't have any national commercials, and you know what else he doesn't have? An ego. He's 6'4", fast, 220 to 225, and in Tennessee is sturdy, doesn't get hurt. I said this for years. Russell Westbrook is not a winning player. He's just fun to watch. Chris Paul is not that fun to watch. He's a winning player. Cam Newton's not a winning player. He's a lot of fun to watch. Ryan Tannehill's a winning quarterback. When you look at Miami since he left, it's just been chaos. So just being 500 in Miami is an accomplishment. What would Tannehill be with Belichick? I mean, seriously. Could he do maybe not six Super Bowls, but the media tends to like interesting and fun to watch and quotable and wow moments. Westbrook's a great example. Cam's a great example. Chris Paul's boring, but like every team he goes to, they win. And I think Mac Jones is going to win a lot of football games. He knows what he's not. It's not often what he does. It's the mistakes he doesn't make. But we have a history here. It's called Ryan Tannehill, who is just tremendous over the last 2 years. You can't find a column written about him. You can't find a topic on any show that does opinions about, even when we talk Tennessee, it's, you know, I think King Henry is, that coaching staff is, boy, that front four against the Rams, it's the only good team in the league. We don't talk their quarterback. Look at his numbers last 2 years.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
There are some things that can only be created or solved with money. Ideas don't matter. It's just money. Money just solves it. It's the only way to get to certain places. I want to go to space. I got an idea for a rocket. Well, it cost $1 billion. Can you afford it? No, Jeff Bezos can. Jeff Bezos gets to go to space. That's just a money issue. There's about 10 to 12 college football programs in America that are tier one college football programs. Some are in the South. Some are in the West. Some are in the Midwest. Some have young coaches. Some have old coaches. Some are in densely populated areas. Some are rural. They all have one thing in common. They're rich programs. Michigan State has always been a tier two. It's a basketball school. It's a tier two school. Michigan is a tier one football program. Michigan State fans are confusing, we're winning games, to we're the superior program. For years and years, last 15 years, Michigan State's dominated Michigan on the field. Now, from about 1970 to about 2007, Michigan dominated Michigan State, and they are the superior program. Don't confuse, we're winning games with, we're tier one. In the 90s, UCLA dominated USC. In Los Angeles, USC will always be the number one program. Great programs. Oklahoma over Oklahoma State. This year, Oklahoma State's better. They are. Oklahoma will always be number one. But Michigan State's doing something rare, and only Oregon has done this in the last 20 years. Oregon was a solid two-tier program. And then Phil Knight said, we're going to go tier one. Built a new stadium, best facilities, marketing, uniforms, coaches, salaries. Money solved it. And Michigan State's going to sign Mel Tucker, a great young coach, to a nearly $100 million deal. And that is the only way money you go from two to one. Because right now, Michigan gets on TV more. They're part of the biggest rivalry in college football. They've always paid, it's a football first school. They've always paid their coaches more. Don't confuse we're beating them on the field to we're beating them in revenue. Michigan makes $135 million a year in revenue. They're a richer football program than Michigan State. What happened to Oregon is happening to Michigan State. Three of Michigan State's biggest boosters are all in on sports. and they're building massive facilities. This has always been a school that if they have a great coach, Saban, you can leave. What they're saying is, no, 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 we want to be Oklahoma. We want to be Michigan. Like, you either get fired, retire, go to the NFL, but you don't need to go anywhere else. Ohio State, it's the best college job you're going to get, one of the top eight. Michigan State's doing it. I think they got the right guy. I love Mel Tucker. But money solved it. They got three donors. They're all rich, and they all love sports. Congrats, Sparty.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I thought it was actually a really good loss for the Lakers. First of all, they were competitive.
Yep.
On the road, competitive. There's nothing wrong with that. Milwaukee's a really good team.
Still no LeBron.
Still no LeBron. And I thought the important thing was two of their young players. This is an old team. They have no young minutes, right? Their bench is ridiculous. You don't want your bench to be Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, Rondo. They need young legs. Malik Monk now is playing more. And Talen Horton Tucker, who's 20 years old, has had back-to-back games where he's been wildly effective offensively. He's got a weird body. He's a second-round guy. He's got kind of a 6'4", looks thick. He's built like a forward, but he's kind of a guard. He's a scorer. And Malik Monk is a scorer. And so I thought it was a good loss. And those guys played some minutes. They like Tucker. LeBron likes Tucker a lot. A very unique second-round player. But I thought it was a good loss. Number one, you got to find some young legs on this franchise. Number two, you're allowing these young guys to grow and get better and play real teams like Milwaukee on the road. That's a real game, a real team. They're physical. The other thing that's going on with the Lakers, that it's, remember last year when AD came in out of shape? I was told LeBron was not happy. LeBron was wanting to pass the regular season baton to AD. AD did not come in shape. So LeBron had to play more minutes. LeBron got hurt and was not 100% in the playoffs. So LeBron this year gets banged up, and he's in no hurry to get back. He's saying, AD, this year, I'm going to let you carry the load a little bit. Because he wasn't happy with him last year. And I'm not saying LeBron would be at 100%, but LeBron knows he's not only important, this team's totally dependent on him. They're not going to win a playoff game, a game, without LeBron James. They're not. The West has got too many solid teams. So I think what's happening to the Lakers last night, I watched that game and I thought, oh, that's a positive loss for the Lakers. I got two young guys playing now. AD is playing pretty well, appears to be in good shape. You're viable on the road against a very, very championship-level team. Not all losses are terrible. And they were competitive. They had a good third quarter. Lakers have been trash all year in the third quarter. They had a terrible second quarter, but they came out and played lights out in the third quarter. So I did not think it was a bad night at all for the Lakers. I think they were down to the stretch. It was competitive, and that's okay.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Well, if you like fantasy football, betting on football, or just getting smarter at football, I think Greg Cosell's about the best 15 minutes out there. I learn something new every week, and he is now joining us. 42 years at NFL Films. So I want to go back to Thursday.
Sure.
Because I do think Lamar Jackson's going to be a playoff quarterback, so let's just figure this out. Miami did something defensively against Lamar, I think. What was it?
It's funny. I'm not sure I've ever seen such a committed game plan approach like that, where they pretty much lined up with defined 7- and 8-man pressure fronts and basically played kind of zero match coverage behind it. They didn't press. It was kind of zero match. And they did that, I would say, maybe 40 snaps, Colin. The Ravens never had an answer. Now, not every team is equipped to do this. The Dolphins are. We actually saw the Dolphins do something similar, nowhere near the commitment to it, but something similar a year ago against Jared Goff and the Rams when they beat the Rams pretty badly, as you may recall. But they did that, like I said, maybe 40 snaps, and the Ravens had no answer. And it'll be interesting. As I said, it's not a blueprint per se, because not every team can do it, but I think you'll see more teams try to create pressure. Look, a year ago in Kansas City, not this year, but a year ago in 2020, Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs played meaningful snaps of zero coverage as well against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens and caused some problems for them. So they're going to have to prove that they can beat this somewhere along the line.
I think Buffalo's as talented as every team in the league, but their offense has not been as consistent, it feels like to me, watching on TV this year. They've gotten some pushback on the O-line. They got back on track this weekend after a stunning loss to Jacksonville. What did they do to get the offense back on track?
It was actually fascinating because when you think of the Bills, Colin, you think of Allen in the shotgun, spread formations, and he's either throwing it around or he's running a lot. Well, in this game, they decided to go base personnel. They played 15 snaps with a fullback on the field.
Wow.
They played 10 snaps with two tight ends. Almost 60% of their snaps came out of some form of base personnel. And they put Josh Allen under center, Colin. Josh Allen under center in this game had 14 passes for 192 yards. So they kind of made a philosophical adjustment in how they wanted to play. Now, we don't know if they did this just to get back on track or if this is something that they're going to continue to do. But they need to run the ball with more volume and production. They started to do that in this game, and they need to protect their offensive line, Colin. This offensive line is not good enough in pass protection to protect for Josh Allen in the shotgun with 45 by choice dropbacks every week. They're not good enough to do that.
So, you know, you'd think every quarterback has a crutch, something they need, something they like, a comfort level. Coaches have it.
Sure.
Brady doesn't have Gronk and AB, and it was suggested to me this week that they're a bigger deal than people think for Brady. He needs his middle-of-the-field guy. AB can be, you can move him in the slot. And, you know, Brady's always had a guy like that. Welker was his guy like that. Edelman was his guy like that. Deion Branch was a guy like that. Like, the guy I always know I can target 13 times. What are you seeing with Brady in the offense? Because it doesn't feel right. Is it just that?
No. Well, it didn't feel right in this game. And I think my guess is that they were surprised. And I'll tell you why. Because Washington had played a lot of man coverage until this game. A lot of what we call cover one with a single high safety and man coverage. They played almost none of it in this game. They came out with a totally different approach philosophically and conceptually from what they had done prior. So my guess is that they showed the Bucs something they did not anticipate. And the other factor in this game was that the Bucs offensive line did not do a particularly good job in pass protection, even after Chase Young went out of the game. And this was one of those games, and I think even great quarterbacks it happens to, I don't think Brady saw things really well. I think that he played a little fast, a ton of checkdowns because there was so much zone, which I think might have surprised him. As I said, I think he wasn't waiting for things to develop at the intermediate and deeper levels. And there were a ton of quick checkdown throws to Leonard Fournette. So they were totally out of sync in this game. And what made it even worse is their defense did not play well. So they were only able to run 47 offensive plays, and that's not enough.
So the Rams in the last couple of weeks have been pushed around, and I had said this, that sometimes McVay can get a little cute and a little pretty, and the Titans and the Niners are really physical teams. And I thought, yes. When I watched that game early, they got Jimmy Ward back, they're getting healthier, Kittle's always been a great blocker, he's valuable, and I thought, boy, this is a classic, the pretty teams losing to the physical team. That's what it looked like on TV to me. How did you describe that?
Yeah, I was more interested in the Niners' tactics because obviously they ran the ball with volume and production. But normally when you do that, there's a play-action pass game that works off that. With your quarterback under center, you get the play-action pass game, you get the reaction you want from the second-level defenders. Well, what was fascinating to me about this game is even though the 49ers ran with volume and production, they didn't feature the play-action pass game at all with Garoppolo under center. Garoppolo had 19 pass attempts in that game. 18 came out of the shotgun. So there wasn't really a marriage between their run game and their pass game, but yet Garoppolo was exceedingly efficient in this
yes.
game.
Yeah, yeah, he was. He was very accurate. First time Russell Wilson has been shut out in his career.
Yeah.
And they weren't. Listen, I think they're too run happy. Pete's answer to everything tends to be run more. I don't think they have elite backs. I think they have good backs. Chris Carson has his moments, but he struggles to stay healthy. So
sure.
Now, or we can be honest about this. Between Mahomes, Kyler Murray, and Russell Wilson, the Packers' defense is actually pretty good without Jair Alexander. Maybe this is a Green Bay defense story, or is it a Russell Wilson Seahawk offense story getting shut out?
I think it's a combination. I think their O-line really struggled. Russell Wilson's always been a fascinating player to me. He's a really good thrower of the football. And that's always been, I think, what has separated him from a lot of other quarterbacks who run a good amount and have second reaction ability, is that he's a really, really good thrower of the football. I think he missed some throws in this game. Maybe that was due to his finger. I can't answer that part of it. But I always saw him, Colin, and I don't know your feeling, despite being a really good thrower, I always saw him as more of an instinctive quarterback, more so than a true rhythm player.
Yeah.
And do you agree with that, by the way?
Well, yeah, he told me one time, I asked him how he scrambles and never gets hit, and he told me as a kid he ran through shopping malls and avoided people, and that's instinct. So his DNA is he's always been a baseball player. Baseball is a lot of instinct.
Right.
I think he plays with instinct over rhythm. I agree.
Yeah, so, and I think that at some point, because – and again, we don't know the answer to this yet. He just came back from an injury, but obviously he didn't really run very much in this game. And I don't know whether he'll continue to do that as he gets healthier and feels more comfortable. I know they're trying to put in a rhythm passing game because it's Shane Waldron who came from the Rams. So he's trying to put in a rhythm passing game. My sense is that marriage is not yet working. Now, Wilson's missed time, so he hasn't been able to practice, so it may take longer. And I think there's a lot of detail and nuance to that style of offense because it's basically McVay's offense. So this might just be the kind of thing that takes some time to develop, because right now their pass game has very, very little rhythm to it at all. It just looks like random plays.
Yeah. So Joy and I have been pushing back a little on the Mac Jones love. He's obviously... listen, if you start looking, a lot of this season for the Patriots has been Belichick beating first and second year quarterbacks. And young, I mean, he's beaten like Zach Wilson twice and Darnold. And a lot of this
right.
has been their defense. They're not asking Mac to do a ton. But for a rookie quarterback, he doesn't make the big mistake, which a lot of rookie quarterbacks do. That's what my eyes tell me. He's gotten out of the big mistake category, and young guys use even, Justin Herbert still occasionally makes them, and he's very good. How impressed are you with Mac Jones?
Well, and your point is valid. They're not asking him to drop back 35, 40 times every week and really be the driving force. They run the ball very well, by the way, and a lot of people overlook that. Plus, their defense has played extremely well. I think what you really like about Mac Jones, and this is not a function of how many dropbacks, is the ball comes out of his hand. It goes to the right receiver at the right time with the right kind of throw, and his ball placement is very precise. So the question is, can he do more than that as he develops? I'm not comparing him to Tom Brady. I don't do that. Yeah, I don't compare guys to, first ballot Hall of Famers. But I remember speaking with Charlie Weiss talking about Brady early in his career, and they didn't ask Brady to do a lot either early in his career. And then he reached a point where they said, you know what, he's capable of doing more. We'll see how Mac Jones develops. But he's executing really well what he's asked to do because of his traits. And those traits are pretty strong. It's interesting. He's not a move around guy. He's not a second reaction guy, but he doesn't get sacked a lot because the ball comes out. He knows where to go with the football.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, as I watched the Chiefs offense get right against the Raiders, and again, this is not nuance. This is just Colin watching TV and trying to think, what am I seeing here? And what I
right.
watched Kansas City do, I said, Andy Reid all week said, patience, more throws to the backs, more throws to the tight ends, patience. It's almost like Andy just said, let's simplify this thing. Give yourself more layups. You're asking too much. That's what it looked like against the Raiders. A lot, they activated running backs catching the pass. A lot of tight end stuff. That's what it looked like they did to their offense. I think, hey, Patrick, shrink it a little bit. Let's make it easier for you. More layups. Hit more layups. That's what it looked like to me. What did the film say against the Raiders?
And you're right. Take the throws that immediately present themselves. Don't wait in the pocket for something that may or may not happen and then get stuck. And I think that was evident pretty quickly. If you noticed in that game, with very few exceptions, he cut out all the unnecessary movement, both inside and outside the pocket, that had defined his game far too much over the last month. He was efficient playing within the structure. He had a sense of timing and rhythm. He took the throws that were immediately there versus the defense. And I think they want to get him back to that. It's like a running back, Colin. Don't try to make every run a 25-yard run. Take what's there, and then the 25-yard runs show up. And I think Mahomes had to get back to just, hey, let me get the ball out of my hand. Let me take what's there, and we'll get back to sustaining offense, and the big plays will come.
Credit to Steve Spagnuolo, because we don't talk about this, but their defense has gotten better in the last month.
It has gotten a lot better.
Now, explain that, and if it matches up with the Cowboys, what do you think?
Well, the Cowboys have a very good offense, obviously. But one thing I've noticed over the last, three, 4 weeks, this is a team that predominantly has played three coverage, predominantly. Cover one, which is man-to-man with a deep safety. Cover zero and cover two. They've really increased their percentage of cover two, which is a zone concept, over the last 3-4 weeks. And we'll see what they do against the Cowboys. I think they'll probably continue to do the same thing, because given who they're playing at corner, my sense is they won't feel they can realistically match up playing a more significant percentage of man coverage.
Okay. Let's move to a fascinating team. So I never want to be somebody who lives in the rearview mirror. And I've been telling Joy this about Jalen Hurts. I said, okay, he doesn't throw a deep ball. And in my life, you got to be able to hit stuff over the top to be a great quarterback. But they're productive. He's given good defensive coaches trouble. There's something going on here. I don't want to be stuck in my, this is what a quarterback has to play like and look like, because the game is changing. So what do the Eagles' offense do differently this week against the Broncos? Because they had them flummoxed at times.
Well, it's funny you say that, because the previous 2 weeks they put Hurts under center and they ran an offense where he was under center with the play action pass game. And many of us, including myself, thought, hey, that's a good thing to do. And then all of a sudden this week against the Broncos, he's almost never under center. This was a Hurts game. They put him in the gun. They worked the run game off him with both zone read and design run elements. And they threw just enough on first down. You know, I came in Monday and I put that tape on, and I'm halfway through the tape and I'm saying to myself, this looks like the Ravens offense with Lamar Jackson. They're playing kind of the same way. And I'm very curious to see what they do going forward, Colin, because the last number of weeks, this past week was totally different than the two previous weeks. So is this week against the Broncos, is that going to be the template, or are they going to go back and put him under center? I certainly don't have the answer to that, but I think Hurts is getting incrementally better and he's seeing things better.
Okay, so let's go to the big play.
Yeah, the big play was a touchdown to Devonta Smith. It was a 5-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
And we can take a look at it right now, because ultimately this touchdown was really interesting because the Broncos played zero coverage, which they do in the tight red zone. So Jalen Hurts is in the shotgun, and the Eagles are going to be in what we call a 1-by-3 set, meaning it's the tight end who's the single receiver. And in the trip side to the formation, Devonta Smith is the point man. He's the point man in the tight bunch. And as I said, you're going to get cover zero. There's going to be no safety in the middle of the field. And that means you're going to get pressure. But you're going to get the matchup of Devonta Smith versus Kyle Fuller, a very good corner. And Curtis Robinson, a linebacker, he's one of the blitzers, because you're going to get all-out, sell-out pressure. And he's going to get in clean. But Smith wins to the inside. Hurts sees him immediately, and they defeat the pressure. You can see that. You get a clean rusher, but because of the timing of the throw, it beats the pressure. And I think Hurts is starting to see things a little better. The question is, each week, how well will he throw it? Because the bottom line is, he hasn't made a lot of throws in each of the last 3 weeks. I think he's only thrown, maybe the most balls he's thrown is 23 or 24. That's not going to happen every week in the NFL.
Get smarter every week, Greg Cosell, my friend. It's great seeing you.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So Dwayne Wade's got a new book out. It's called Dwayne. It's a photographic memoir of his life and his career. And it's, you know, it's funny what you think of. So when I think of Dwayne Wade, there's two memories that come out. And this is the first one. So he got drafted like 2003 or something like that out of Marquette. And I watched college basketball. He's very physical. He wasn't a He was a scorer, but he wasn't a pretty shooter, but he was so real physical. So I followed him. I was into him. I liked him. He played like a four when he was a guard. About 2 years into the league, I talked to a coaching friend of mine. I'm like, this guy's on the floor constantly. He's never going to last. He plays like a power forward. And the coach said to me, he said, look at that body. That's a guy that works out every day of his life. He was built. He said, that kid could play football. He goes, I don't worry about his body. He said, these guys are getting banged around that are skinny. These guys, those are the guys that fall off the cliff, right? And so Dwayne Wade, first ballot, one of the great players, probably a top 20 player in the history of the league. And he was so important for the league, now joins us live. So I want to go back to when you came into the league, because I would watch you and I'm like, there's no way this can last. He's literally a football player. He's getting tackled. He's falling on the hard floor. Did anybody early in your career, like Pat Riley, say, Dwayne, stop, don't be so physical? Does that anybody ever say that to you?
Bob McAdoo would tell me all the time, you're not gonna last if you keep throwing your body all over the floor. And I was like, Bob, if I don't play this way, it ain't gonna matter anyway, because I'm not gonna be good. I'm not a shooter. I'm not gonna be good. So I had to play that way. That's what I grew up, that's how I grew up playing.
The other thing that's always jumped out to me is more personal. So this is very rare for a superstar. You made Shaq work. You made LeBron work. You married Gabrielle Union, a star in her own right. You have always made, you've never had a problem in your life. And this is how I view you, of saying, oh, I'm going to step back a little and I'm going to watch somebody else perform. And that is rare. Steph Curry's got that. You have that. 99% of entertainers, singers, you have been willing, and you didn't have to, but sometimes say, I'm going to be a co-star here a little bit. I'm going to make this thing work. Where does that come from? Because it doesn't seem hard. It seems innate. It seems like that is, even in your fashion stuff, you work well with all sorts of people. You can be a star. You can be a co-star. Where does that come from?
First of all, thank you. I appreciate you noticing that quality. I don't think a lot of people really talk about that. And I don't know, Colin, I get joy out of watching others be successful. I get joy out of watching others get what they want. And I've been a part of, and I've been blessed enough from the game of basketball to play with some of the greatest players that will ever play the game of basketball. And one thing I knew going through this process of sport is that nothing got accomplished alone and nothing felt great alone. Like, I never want to go out to dinner and eat by myself. I want to eat at a table full of all the people I want to be with. And I want all of us to fight for the bill when it comes, because we can all afford it. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be the only one that can pull out my credit card. So that's, you know, just an analogy, but I just use sport in life. You know, when it comes to me and my wife, it's just like me and LeBron, or me and Chris, or me and Shaq. Like, we're partners. And some days I'm going, you know, I'm a lead, and some days she's going to lead, and some days someone else is going to have to lead because we ain't going to have a great night. You know, it's just, basketball has taught me so much, and I use it in life.
When you go back and you look at the Heatles and the magic of it, I want you to take me somewhere. So we all know 90% of what happened. I'm going to ask a favor. I want you to tell me the first phone call that ever happened, and I don't know who initiated it, and somebody said, you know, it'd be kind of fun if we played together. I want a scoop, Dwayne Wade. I'll never ask another favor. What was the first call?
So the first call, I was living in Chicago, around the East Bank Club. I don't know how many people know what East Bank Club is. Yeah, so I lived right off, the East Bank Club was pretty much my backyard.
Yeah.
And I get a call from my agent, Henry Thomas. At the time, Henry Thomas was we had just moved to CAA. We had a nice office downtown Chicago. And he said, come down, I want to talk to you about something. And I'm thinking, you know, it's free agency time coming up, you know, and stuff like that. So I'm like, okay, you want to talk to me about free agency? Well, long story short, he brought me down there. And that was at the moment where Hank expressed to me what the Heat had the opportunity to do. I didn't know anything about the Heat having the opportunity to have enough money to be able to go get two other star players. And so that was the moment where we got on the phone, as in Leon Rose, who was representing LeBron James at the time,
yeah,
and Henry Thomas, who was representing me. Brown and I got on the phone, and I was all ears. And they presented this to us as, hey, you know, this is something that we're hearing from the Heat. What's up? You know, kind of like, what's up? And so I would give the credit to probably, I think Brown knew about it before me. Because I think Leon was one of the, you know, I think Leon called Hank about, you know, hearing about this and an opportunity. But Colin, it goes back to when we signed our deal the first time, when we signed a 3-year deal, we did the same thing. Our agents, being with the same agency, they came together and they talked about, you know, the loophole in the contract to allow us to be able to sign this deal and sign another one before we get too old or whatever the case may be. So it's just that communications of two great agents who had relationships, but also had two clients who were friends and had relationships.
You did something else is fascinating about you, and both you and LeBron, this is true of, you came into the league when it was more physical and starred, and then it got more finesse, no hand check, a lot of threes, and you also starred. I wonder if you've ever thought about this, because you're one of those guys, you would have succeeded, you know, regardless. But the league now is, I mean, sometimes it's a three-point shooting contest. I like in the NBA playoffs when the refs swallow the whistle. And physical guys, because I miss the physicality of it. But do you sometimes look at this league and think, man, I came in at the right time where physical prowess, toughness mattered? Because that's where you, to me, that's where you made your mark. Like, this is the most physical guard I've ever seen in my, in fact, I think you lead the NBA all time, most blocks by a guard. Do you think the time you came into the league was perfect? Your physicality mattered and you made an impact with it?
I do. I will 100,000% agree with you on the league and the rules of the game, the style of play. Everything was perfect for us as stars. And I thank the NBA for even noticing the game started to evolve to actually fit towards the way that we played the game of basketball as the young coming stars in the game. But I grew up playing physical because that's what the NBA, or that's what my community, or that's where, you know, that's how I grew up playing basketball. So to me, It was just what you do. Now, if you ask me, can I play the game of basketball today and have the same success without having the ability to shoot threes like everybody else? I would say yes. Just like I watched DeMar DeRozan score 38 and 36 and 30.
Right.
If you could play the game of basketball, you know, in the way that some guys can, you can play anywhere. So yeah, and I have to say, I'm so glad that the NBA has loosened the rules up. And we kind of going back to seeing some hand checking, seeing a little physicality. Yeah. It makes the game better. So thank you, NBA.
You know what? I've been saying this, Dwayne. This is my theory on it, that the hand check, when they took away the hand check, more guards get hurt. Here's my theory. The hand check mostly kept guards from going into the forest and getting knocked over by the trees. Now, you can't stay in front of any of these guys. And so they attack the basket. A 6'11 guy from Lithuania comes over, blocks them. They crash to the floor. They don't have your body. So the hand check, I think I told either Adam Silver or somebody, I said the hand check will keep your guards healthier, actually, because now it's just too darn easy to get to the basket now. Anyway, that's my stupid theory. Okay, well, I'm going to go to something else. When you look at your career, you're going to get into the Hall of Fame, obviously. And I know where you're from in Chicago. In fact, you were talking about that health club. I was on a boat tour not long ago in Chicago, and they pointed that club out, and they said, you know, Barack Obama works out at that club. So I know that club. That's like a legendary club, right?
So I used to be on a boat tour. They used to say Dwayne Wade lives there. It was amazing.
Yes. It's a great tour, by the way, if you're in Chicago. It's fascinating. So go back to your childhood and your dreams, and you've accomplished all this. Will you be emotional when you get into the Hall of Fame? Like, what will you think of when you're at that podium and you're into the Hall of Fame? What human in your life will you think of?
my mother, my father, probably be the first two people. Is, you know, I being a kid and, you know, I talk about my journey very openly, my mother and my father do. But, you know, going through life and being 9 years old and sitting across from your mother, and it's a big plastic, I mean, a big, going to prison and using a phone and having to talk to my mom through this plexiglass, through this big, thick plexiglass, that image will never go out of my head. So when I'm on that podium that day, you know, when I get the opportunity, if I'm blessed enough to get the opportunity to be there, to accept it, that's what's going to go through my mind. It's going to be moments and memories like that. Like, Colin, you hear athletes say it all the time, like, we're not supposed to be here. Well, it's so many things that try to get in my way to try to knock me down and try to keep me down from being here. Whether it was my mom going to prison, whether it was not passing the ACT score, whether it was having Zaire at 19 years old, whatever it was a lot of roadblocks. And I'm going to think about those roadblocks. And that's the reason I even write a book, because I know it's kids out there that will have roadblocks. And you need an image of someone to see that you can get past it.
I know the Heat offered you some ownership and sort of the Jazz, but since I ski in Utah all the time and go to Jazz games, I like that. Nothing against Miami, but I think it's great and it's a well-run operation. So I want to congratulate you on that. And in fact, Joy, I think you mentioned this yesterday on the show, is that we are seeing now, you know, Michael Jordan, obviously, Dwayne Wade up, Magic's got some Dodger ownership in this. And it's funny because I know that Miami offered you some and Utah, and my takeaway was, Utah gave you a better business deal. Am I right on that? I mean, let's be honest.
Let's just say I couldn't pass up on an opportunity to grow alongside Ryan Smith. Everything that he stands for, everything that he's trying to build, you know, in the city, in the state of Utah is something that I couldn't pass up on. You know, I talked to Ryan years ago and told him, you know, when I retired, I wanted to learn more about the tech world. I wanted to be a bigger investor. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make my money work for itself. And I knew tech was an important part of that. And so it's just so many opportunities that, you know, that presents itself for me. It's Utah's 1 hour, 15 minutes away from my house. But I think the most important thing is my legacy in Miami is I like where it is. I don't want to mess with it right now. I don't want to touch it right now. For me, I'm in my business mindset. So my business mindset, I felt that Utah was the best opportunity for my services and what I can bring to not only a team, but to a state. You know, at the same time, as we're in this process in the world, as we're trying to move everyone forward. And, you know, Ryan Smith and Ashley Smith are doing it. So I'm proud to be partners of theirs in this business venture called the Utah Jazz.
All right. It's a beautiful arena, too, by the way. This is the book right here. It's beautiful. Photographic memoir. There's basketball stuff. Go to Amazon.com and get it. There's all sorts of stuff. Great family pictures here. Look at you. You get fashionable. Oh, look at that. Beautiful wife right there. Wow. God, you guys are good-looking people. Man, oh, man. Look at that.
Well, look what the makeup can do. I'll tell you that.
Look at that right there. The poolside.
Yeah, that's a good shot.
You guys are good-looking. I'm a little bit jealous right there. I'm not going to lie to you. All right, Dwayne, absolute pleasure. You've given so much to the game. It was so nice of you to stop by. You got a million shows that want you on. You were nice enough to come on our show, and you're a credit to the game, and I just love you to death, man, and I appreciate it.
I appreciate the platform and opportunity, and I love your show. I comment on your show, but I'm a big Joy fan, so I really watch it for her. Sorry, Colin.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Just like you, I'm a giver. I'm okay. I'll be a co-host. Thanks, Dwayne.
All is good. Thank you, guys.
Dwayne Wade, NBA champ.